Welcome to the Hunt Back Country podcast. This is episode number 457, and it is the first of two episodes that we are releasing back to back about our recent 2024 death hike in the Grand Canyon. In this episode, Steve and I recap the hike, the plan, the preparation, and ultimately how it went. And then in episode number 458, you can hear from four other participants of the hike and learn from their experiences and takeaways from the hike. Additionally, there is a link in the show description if you want to see some behind-the-scenes video, some photos, links to some of the gear that we mention, examples of my food list and what I used for nutrition on this hike, so be sure to check that out as well. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. If you're enjoying the show and can leave a rating or review in whatever podcast app you are using, that does help us tremendously. And if you have any questions or feedback for us directly, send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Hit pause and do that right now if you can. Then come right back. Let's join this conversation between Steve and myself, recapping the death hike. Well, Steve, another death hike in the books. In this podcast, you and I are going to chat a bit. We're going to have segments with different participants, so telling different stories. And that's one thing is unique about every death hike is for each person participating, they're going to have different takeaways, a different experience, a different time, different weather sometimes, right? It's so interesting to walk out of a death hike and to know what it was like for me, or for you to know what it's like for you. But with 20 plus guys, there's gonna be a lot of different experiences, so it's fun to include other perspectives, and we'll get to that. But we've mentioned on previous podcasts what the plan was for the death hike. We've talked about it on Monday Minutes, etc. But obviously, people are going to tune into this specific episode, this conversation, and maybe not have context. So let's just start with the big picture of this year's death hike and what the plan was.
Yeah. So every year, essentially before that year's hike ends, I'm already thinking about, what could we do next year? We've certainly talked about how the goal is just, I already know I can push my body hard. I've learned a lot of lessons from 10 years of doing this. But it's like, how much further into the future can I keep doing these hard things? A quick takeaway for me is if I want to keep pushing really, really hard, I really have to up the ante on just my overall strategy going into it. Leading up to now, I think it's like if I just kind of did what I normally do and just ramp up things, right? Like lots of mountain biking, lots of weighted pack hikes, mix in some kind of exercise type movements, I was pretty much good to go. And I think I really got to start focusing on, the core strength stuff, that's which is going to eliminate some of the knee issues I've been having nagging me. But so started just researching around, asking guys, what's a cool hike to do, get some thoughts. And then we were debating going back up to Alaska, doing something in Idaho. And then the one constant theme we had was let's do something early. Like in 21, we did the Frank Church snowshoe hike, which was the first weekend of April. It was actually just really nice. January, February, March, kind of a good time to be training. Typically a time of year when you could potentially be more apt to be lazy. You kind of got that late winter crappy conditions outside. And I liked that year. So I was like, all right, let's set that as our parameter and then work backwards from there. Like, where can we go hike? Are we going to do snowshoes again? Or do we head, say, south or somewhere low in elevation that's not going to have a bunch of snow? Isn't necessarily the issue, but just be kind of access, right? Like, are the roads open? Can you get into this place? And then somewhere along the lines, Grand Canyon came up. I don't know if I thought of it or someone mentioned it to me. And we were talking with the guys from Wilderness Athlete, Kevin and Chris Denham over there. And they do the rim to rim to rim every year, which, I've kind of heard of, but I didn't know, specific details. Obviously, there's a couple variations of it, come to find out, just depending on what trail you use. But we researched it, and it was like, okay, one rim to rim to rim is 45-ish miles, depending on the trail you take. 11, 12,000 feet of elevation gain, all on good established trail. And I'm kind of going, well, that's not enough. Like we've done our hardest death hike day was first day of the 100 milers that we did back in, I want to say 16 and no, 17 and 20, something
17,
like that.
yeah, 17 and
17 and
20.
2020. And that first day was 37 miles with a lot of off trail, side hill, rugged, scree fields, moving through the White Cloud Mountains of Idaho. So to say that we're going to do 45 on Groom Trail, I was like, oh, that's not hard enough. So we need to do two. And that's where it set out. And then the temptation was there. I was like, oh man, if we do two, and that's, say 45 miles, two of them 90 miles, like we're damn close to getting to that 100, which we've never actually hit. We've attempted the 100 milers twice and come up just a few miles short. And so then I was like, okay, I'm gonna build a route so that we get to 100 miles, and that was the goal. So kind of established that all the way back in January. People bought their flights. We rented, logistically, it was really easy to fly into Vegas, and then we rented a couple of vans, and it was like a 4-hour drive over to Grand Canyon Village, which is on the south rim. The north rim this time of year is closed because of snow. So that really your only jumping off points is south rim, and then we're even more limited to there's a two trails right there, Bright Angel and South Kaibab, Kaibab. That Bright Angel trail is closed, so it's like, okay, here's our one trail point. Made it real simple. That's our jumping off point, and yeah, rented a campground right there, a big group camp spot. So everyone's like, all right, get here on this day for the guys who weren't flying to Vegas and driving with us. And that's how it worked. Went and trained my butt off this year. Personally, it's the most training I've ever done, and I did vary things a lot. Last year, after I had to bow out, I can't remember what it was, 12, 14 miles early because of knee band or knee pain, which I've come to find out is actually a real. It's called IT band syndrome, which is just essentially saying you consistently have very tight IT bands that basically pull up on the outside of your knees and cause a lot of pain. And it's something you can YouTube it, and there's all sorts of, YouTube PTs giving you advice on how to fix it and adjust it and things like that. So yeah, I personally trained my tail off getting ready for this. I built a game plan how I was going to execute it, and yeah, how about you?
I felt good going into it. I mean, for some people who may listen to previous podcasts or know, I've been struggling with a knee issue since really this time last year, since about May of last year, on and off. Didn't do last year's death hike because of that. And then also because I was going into, a big hunt year, including my sheep hunt. So I was like, I skipped last year's death hike because of the knee. Didn't want to push it, didn't want to injure it, had the sheep hunt. And yeah, so I was super hungry for a death hike, having missed one, and not missing others prior. So it was tough to miss one. I made it through hunting season. The knee held up pretty good. I basically narrowed it down to I can still hike really well, with intentionality of trying to do some things to help my knee, but running was that impact was still bugging me a bit. So anyway, I had some level of concern, hesitation with training, but just trained smart. I did a lot of extra mobility, strengthening exercises, etc. So overall, I felt pretty good going into the hike. Trained, I think, as best as I could without, like you can always do more. And I was struggling with, more training would have essentially just been less sleep and less time with my family, which is always a struggle because I'm already not sleeping a ton and I'm already, like just really careful of how much time I'm taking away from the family for stuff like this. So I did everything I could with the time and sacrifice that I could make. Strategically, training felt great. I felt good going into it. I didn't really hike for Like we had spring break the week before the death hike. And we went out and me and my son biked a bunch that week. So I basically didn't hike for like 10 to 12 days before the death hike, but stayed active, mountain biked a whole bunch. And going into the hike, my knee felt good. I felt in shape. I felt rested and was just super freaking eager, man. Like really excited to get there, see everybody again, hang out. And I had done a rim to rim previously about 10-ish years ago. Just a one-way trip, so not a rim to rim to rim, but just a rim to rim from north to south. So I was familiar with that, familiar with being in the Grand Canyon and traversing the Grand Canyon. And it was that alone was an amazing experience. So I was just excited to get back in there and see how it went. So I mean, there was always, going into this, like everything else, just like a most big hunts, like there's always last minute, like, well, what's the weather going to end up doing? And should I do this or that or bring this or that? Right. So, yeah, there was kind of some final decisions and questions, and weather was looking questionable. Like there was chances of snow. There was a National Weather Service wind advisory. Yeah. So it was just like a lot of good anxiousness in the sense of just excitement going into this thing.
Yeah, it just leads right up into the hike. The weather going in the week prior was not looking stellar. The weeks leading up to that, just kind of, the south rim's at 7,200 feet, the north rim's at 8,400 feet. So you're high in elevation. So it's certainly exposed to weather this time of year. But and generally speaking, you're going to have decent weather, but there's the chance of snow. And that was certainly in the forecast for us of really high winds. This is like 20, 30 miles an hour with up to 40, 50 mile an hour gusts. And it was just kind of like, oh crap, this could make the hike really difficult. But I mean, it's like we're going, whether the weather's good or complete crap, or it's scheduled. Everyone's got their flights. We're showing up and just make the most of it. And rolled into camp Thursday. Everybody, I was my brother-in-law was Jory, who did the his first hike was last year. He was a little bit later getting into Vegas, so I stayed back, waited for him. You guys all got there, got dinner, got camp set up, got all ready to go. We rolled in about dark, kind of rushed, got everything set up, got the packs built and whatnot, and then ate a quick meal. I had a plan to last year. It's funny how you think so much of your decisions are based on learning from past experiences. Last year, I did not sleep at all. I was like, I'm taking a freaking sleeping pill. This year, I might be groggy for the first couple hours, but I there's last year I literally slept like 30 minutes the night before the hike. It was absolutely terrible. So I took a pill and woke up at 3:30, and I think just all the excitement of getting started, I popped right out of the quilt and I just brought a little one man tent, and the goal is to be hiking at 4:00, and I think it was like 4:08 or something in the morning. We took our group photo and started down the trail.
Yeah, I think I had an alarm set for maybe 3:20, but there was guys up and moving and chatting before that. Everybody was amped, so guys were basically up at between 3 and 3:30 and throwing the packs together, final, water fill-ups and grabbing trekking poles, guys stretching out, trying to wake up, get loose, trying to stay warm. It was definitely a chilly start. And then, yeah, as you said, we're set off right after 4 and essentially had, what was that? I think it was like 2.7, 2.8
Yeah,
miles,
two.
something like
Yep.
that, from our campground to the actual
Yeah.
rim of the Grand Canyon. So people talk about a rim to rim to rim, and there's trailheads right at the rim of the canyon. But with our campground, we were, yeah, between 2.5 to 3 miles away from that.
Which, yeah, so that was intentional, like I said, to try to get to that 100 miles. It was like I didn't see consistent stats. And I think a lot of that's just because we had that within our own group, right? If you're recording on your watch versus your phone, we had it anywhere from 48.5 miles to 51.6, is which I recorded on I ran Strava on my phone the entire time. But yeah, we just started hiking, clipping along, and I think everybody had a different game plan. Certainly some guys wanted to run as much as possible. run the flats, and just kind of get a feel for the trail as they were going, and they were going to run certain parts of it. And I would say, you know, there was what, five, six guys up front doing that. I personally had, you know, I basically built a game plan in my head that if I could maintain, if I could hike at a 3 mile an hour pace, that was just my average pace for the entire duration of the trip. And then with a little bit of breaks here and there, it would drop to like 2.75, 2.8 miles per hour. So I'm just doing the quick math, like, all right, if it ends up being, you know, I didn't think it was going to be 51 miles. I was thinking it was going to be more like 47, 48. Like, all right, 48 divided by 2.75, perfect. And I'll be back to camp by like 10 o'clock tonight, get 6 hours of sleep and repeat it for the next day. And that was my game plan. I knew I couldn't, because of my lower back issues, there's no way I could have run. But I knew if I could maintain that pace that the guys running, even if they didn't blow themselves up, were not going to be too far in front of me. And that certainly turned out to be the case. So yeah, drop into the canyon, and it was, I think, I don't know how to describe it. It's absolutely beautiful. You and I were certainly like on a runner's high as they were halfway down the South Rim, and the sun's coming up, and I think it was you, me, and Will hiking together at that point. Shot some selfie videos, you know, we're just like smiles ear to ear, like just really excited for the day and what it was going to bring.
Yeah, it was cool. Like even the very first start is interesting because it's pitch black and you're descending quick, especially on that South Kaibab trail, and it's a bunch of switchbacks. And so it's pitch black dark, and just seeing headlamps of all these people at different spots and different switchbacks was cool. And then yeah, as the sun started to come up and you start to see what you're descending into, you start to see the Grand Canyon. I mean, it's just pretty dang spectacular for sure. Such a cool, I always like, it could be the simplest thing. I, you know, even say whitetail hunting, right? Sitting in the tree stand. That's one of my favorite things, is just being up in the morning, or even my training hikes. Go start in the dark and just get to experience the sunrise. And whether you actually see the direct sunrise or not, just that, you know, a new day coming to life is such a cool thing.
Yeah.
But to do that in the Grand Canyon with a bunch of great dudes, I mean, yeah, it's hard to get much better than that. So definitely was feeling a quote unquote, as you said, runner's high. But one thing that did, I think, catch a lot of people off guard is that descent. It's steep, it's switchbacks, but it's also rough. There's steps, there's rocks, there's big ruts. And so, especially for the runners, it's hard to run that efficiently. Sometimes it's hard to hike it efficiently just because the way the ruts are and the steps are and how they're spaced. You definitely can't just like keep a, whether you're running or hiking, a perfect stride and a perfect cadence at all times. And then obviously just a big, I mean, you're losing, you know, thousands of feet right out of the gate. Like that's a big test of the body right away. And, you know, for like you, Steve, with your knee, my knee, people with different issues, like it is a potential to know pretty early into this hike. It's a pretty big stress on the body, you know, just that descent.
Yeah. I was legit. So that exactly 1 week prior, I had done a training hike, which we talked about, I think, on a Monday minute, where I just did 22 miles and 6,000 feet of elevation gain. Cause it set, I built that route like, all right, this is going to be exactly half of one, you know, so a quarter of the entire trip. I'm going to push myself really hard this day and just see how I feel. And it was a really muddy mess and I felt terrible. In fact, in hindsight, I was worse after that than I was after doing the full 51 miles. My knee was, both knees were kind of bugging me, but my left knee in particular. And my brother-in-law actually, he's an orthopedic surgeon, so he put a cortisone shot in my knee, which I was kind of like, you know, like, okay, this could be good, or this could really be bad if I push too hard, not feeling what's going on down there. So I had this little bit of nervousness, and it's like, oh, I'll find out what happens as I get to the bottom of this canyon. But got to the bottom and frankly felt great. I just had a strategy of conserve, 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 right? Like if there was a big step that was 18 inches, I figured out how to do it in two steps down. Or, you know, just really kept movements small and efficient knowing that it was going to be a long 2 days, right? If you were, just running down the trail and beating your body up, that I just had this plan, or at least I knew within my capabilities that I couldn't do that for 2 days straight. And really, high level, like, executed absolutely perfectly. It was killing me. You get down to the bottom, there's this place called Phantom Ranch where you can, there's places to camp, there's cabins you can rent. There's actually a little mini restaurant down there that they bring all the food and supplies in by mules every day, which is kind of cool. But the group was really blowing me away. It was from Phantom Ranch to Manzanita. So you kind of get to the bottom and then there's this 9 mile stretch that's just, I think you probably climb 1500 feet over that, but it feels relatively flat. I was in the back of the group. I was at like 18th, but I'm sitting there looking at my phone constantly going, I'm averaging 3.2 miles per hour. Like I'm doing exactly what I want to do, actually just a touch faster. And, I had a, you know, I was just kind of curious, like the, you know, when I, the group in front of me did stop to get water or something like that, nobody looked overextended or anything like that. I was really, really impressed with the group as a whole, how much training they did. It was hands down the most fit we've been as a group for the hike.
Yeah, to use a rough, I mean, this is not exact. This is me rounding numbers, but we start at the South Rim. I'm going to use rough numbers. I'm going to say 8 miles to Phantom Ranch, and then you got like this 8-ish mile stretch to like Manzanita, which, as you said, Steve, is mostly flat. You're gaining a little bit, but it's over such a long distance, you're not really feeling it. And then you have the final climb from Manzanita up to the North Rim. So again, those mileages aren't exact, but I bring all that up to say it was just very nice logistically to go South Rim to Phantom, Phantom to Manzanita, Manzanita to the North Rim, and then repeat. Because those, one thing that's unique with the Grand Canyon is obviously, you know, doing something like this, you need water sources, which if you go in the main season, there's kind of water everywhere. They have a good system for water. A lot of that was shut off for the winter. So all those stretches I just mentioned were also the best water fill-ups, if you don't want to be filtering, which none of us did. So we basically were able to break up the hike on the way from south to north into those three sections and then repeat on the way back. So in terms of like water and breaks, which were minimal, it was basically just really easy to have that hike separated into descend, stop, flat, stop, climb, stop, turn around and go back. It was just really nice to be able to do that and have those checkpoints for water, hydration, you know, if you're changing socks, that type of thing. And I bring all that up to say, you know, in death hikes or people planning their own, there's just making sure that you are taking care of yourself. It's something we talk a lot about with nutrition, hydration, et cetera. But it's having those checkpoints is really helpful. And whether you do that based on landmarks or time or distance, it's just always something to keep in mind when you try and take a 50-mile day to break that up into manageable chunks and give yourself some checkpoints is helpful. And it was really easy to do on this hike.
Yeah. And it's also just a good tip for, I mean, packing out an animal or anything in life. You want to lose 20 pounds. Like if you can create little micro goals for yourself, it makes everything seem a lot more achievable, you know, digestible.
All that said, Steve, we, as people will hear in the segments with other guys, we had those checkpoints and the spots for water fill-ups and breaks, but we used them, but only very quickly.
I think my total moving time was 16 hours and 8 minutes. So that Strava separates when you stop versus when you're hiking. And then my total in all that time, I think I had like maybe an hour of stops. So but all the water stops for, you know, stop, fill up your water, eat a snack, change your socks and keep going. I mean, that's incredibly minimal. Normally that would be, you know, in the past hikes we've done, it's like you go 6 miles and rest 30 to 45 minutes. So you'd have, yeah, basically we're just moving the entire time, which was cool. Yeah. What else, man? I mean, we run up the North Rim. And some guys, which had been pushing kind of hard, fell back a little bit. You started seeing some guys with some kind of stomach issues, which I almost always correlate with just pushing really hard. Your fuel hasn't been exactly dialed in, too much of something or not enough of another thing, and then you're pushing, you're exerting your body. And we've had a few guys kind of bonk, but just had like real heavy gut issues, which is consistent with hikes. But some guys cruise right up to the North Rim, and then my goal was to find a pace, and we did this not on both climbs to the both rims. They didn't stop a single second. And just basically find a pace, find a cadence that you could maintain, and just hike all the way to the top without any breaks. Did that really well. Got to the top, and ended up only being like less than 10 minutes behind the front group that was running, which over, 25 miles, said 10 minutes is not much. That means they were, roughly 3/4 of a mile in front of me. And then you were right there behind me. I think, yeah, I hadn't been sitting there for 5 minutes, and you rolled it in, and we ate a snack, changed out some socks. I did anyways. You never change your socks once, which you have to talk about. And then yeah, proceeded to run down the North Rim. And at this point, I'm feeling fantastic. Like there is a 1,000% chance we're going on day two. Feel just great. The knee's holding up. Everything just, yeah, fantastic. Just felt really good. And then it was hard not to be captivated by the scenery. Like just that North Rim is incredible. I hiked the majority of the North Rim by myself because I said I had that pace, and I was basically kind of in between groups or just passing guys as I went by. And there's that one, I mean, just how the trails cut into those cliffs, and that one section right before the bridge, if I remember right, where you're looking up, and I couldn't see any bodies hiking up there, and I'm like, where the hell does the trail go? It was an unbelievable. Like, I don't see it down there. There's no way it climbs up that. There's no way it goes in front of me. Like it was pretty cool to see put one foot in front of another, and all of a sudden, well, it switchbacks here and climbs up to this little spot, and bam, you get through this cliff section. It was really cool. Yeah, so it cruised back down to Manzanita. We think I had to take a restroom break right there real quick. Again, swap out socks, eat a little snack, and then it's at this point, I started just feeling fantastic. It's like, oh man, we got the 8, 9 miles down to Phantom Ranch, and then pull the climb out, and I'm going to be in bed. We got to the south, we went from the South Rim to the North Rim in just under 8 hours, and I'm sitting there going, and it was noon. Like, okay, I was like, well, we're crushing it. We'll go a little bit slower on the way back just to conserve energy, but add an hour to it. So 9 o'clock, we'll be back to camp. And I'll be in bed by 9:30, and I'm just looking, things are looking awesome. Yeah. Where were you at?
I mean, what you said about climbing the North Rim, I was the same, and it felt, I mean, what's that climb, Steve? Is that 5,000 feet ish, plus or minus?
I don't know. Because
But
from
I mean, it's,
Phantom, I can't remember exactly how much elevation you climb from Phantom up to Manzanita, because it's more than you think. But you go from that 2,400 back up to 8,400, so it's 6,000 feet from Phantom Ranch to the top. But I
But
don't, I say it's at least 1,500 from Phantom Ranch, that 9 miles up there. So yeah,
So
you're
say
in that
it's
4,000-ish range to climb from Manzanita up.
So from Manzanita up, let's say it's 4,000. It's at least that, and it's steep, as you said, switchbacks. But same as you, and I just recap this because it was one, my experience, but two, to highlight it for guys that I think even applies to hunts. Like, it sounds maybe wild to say climb 4,000 feet without taking a break, but it's totally doable. And it reminded me of, especially an early, like early in a hunt, the first climb of a hunt, I'm always feeling a bit winded, right? Like getting your legs under you, that type of thing. But just reminds me how efficient you can be if you pick a pace that you can stick with versus like hoofing it and then stopping and catching your breath and taking a break and whatever. because just pulling 4,000 feet without stopping, you may not move as fast at any one time, but you can do it so stinking efficient that, yeah, it was just, it was cool. It was cool to be able to knock out big climbs like that. And not even, I mean, I never even once thought about taking a break and wasn't gassed, but I was still moving. You know, it's not like I was just crawling. So
it's funny. I talked to AJ, one of the guys that does a hike every year. He was struggling on the climbs a little bit. He's like, I'm just slower on the climbs. And I'm like, I just got to take more breaks. I'm like, well, dude, you just need to slow down and find a pace that you can maintain. Cause he's kind of like this, you know, it takes a break. And then there's like maybe this sense of urgency that I need to climb super fast. But then you can do that for, you know, half a mile, a mile. And then, oh crap, I'm winded. I need to take a break again. And I know personally, when I used to race mountain bikes, on a mountain bike, on a climb, you can't stop and like get off your bike and take a drink. I mean, you could, but it's a race. Like you got to keep moving. So you're absolutely forced to find, you got to basically, you know, you're at the bottom of a climb. You got to look at the climb. You got to look at maybe the topography of it, right? All right, here's a steep pitch. Here's a flat pitch. Or if it's just a real steady grade, you got to find a cadence that you can maintain throughout that entire thing. And if you kind of treat a climb that way with while you're hiking, right, it works out really well. And you're just a lot more efficient, right? Because you're just level. You don't have these kind of peaks and valleys of heart rate shoots way up to 165, 170. And then you got to stop and let it, you know, take a drink of water, eat a snack. It dives back down to 90 and then you start up again. If you can hit, I never actually did this, but I said I wanted to, is just hit 130 on your heart rate and just maintain that. Like if the trail is less steep, you pick up your pace a little bit more. If the trail, you know, gets steeper, you back off just a touch, but these are just little minute changes just to keep your heart rate at that steady state. And it works out really well.
Yep. Yeah. I tracked the whole effort, and I was actually wore a heart rate strap because the watch based ones aren't super accurate if you're only doing the wrist. And my average heart rate for the entire thing, I think, was 123 maybe. So it was cool to see that. And again, like cruising, moving, doing good, being efficient, but not like, yeah, just overextending yourself and then trying to make up for it with breaks. But yeah, the climb, the North Rim felt great. The whole time I kept thinking, I'm going to see someone any second, right? The guys descending, the guys who are running, the guys who were in my head out way ahead, they're going to be hitting the top, taking a break, turning around and passing me as I'm going up. They're going to be coming down any second. And that never happened. And then all of a sudden I was at the North Rim and it was like everyone was there, you know? There's a lot of guys obviously still climbing behind, but you were slightly ahead of me. The guys out in front were still there, and it kind of, yeah, just showed the efficiency of the pace, which was cool. And I was feeling great and was able to take a deuce up there, which felt even better to be able to head back. I was like, all right. So, yeah, man, dude, the return, the drop down North Rim, jaw dropping gorgeous. I mean, another thing we had in our favor was for that North Rim climb and descent. That's one area where, especially that time of day, it could be hot. You could be exposed, but it was cool, cloudy, windy, a mix of rain and snow. And really for the climb, that was huge in terms of managing effort, managing exposure, managing hydration, because it just, having done it before, like it can be brutal, obviously, in the heat. And we were super fortunate with the fact that on one hand, you could look at the weather and say it was terrible because it was, you know, blowing rain and snow. But on the other hand, it would have felt a lot worse if it was just pure sun and heat. So we were definitely fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, for all the worry the week leading up to the weather, at this point, it's fantastic. It's like, yeah, there's some really high winds, but and a little bit of, like at one point I got some hail, you know, beat me in the eye. So I was climbing up the North Rim and I was like, ah, it sucks. But yeah, way better than the heat. And yeah, the really is like, man, the weather's freaking beautiful considering what we're expecting. So yeah, cruise down to Phantom Ranch. We did that's probably I got like a little bit of a low point in that flat section from Manzanita back down to Phantom, where just kind of, you know, your body's, no matter what you do on these things, And we all know this from experience at this point. You're going to go through highs and lows where I think your body's just adjusting to what's going on. And maybe you ate something that, you wasn't quite what your body needed at that moment or whatever. But I had a little bit of a low point and was looking forward to like getting to Phantom, refilling the water. And then I was going to pound some gummy bears, throw a tailwind, and then climb right out of the South Rim. And yeah, I mean, I was full just like 1000% gonna be doing the next day. And the group as a whole, like, again, like we get to Phantom and there's, oh, let's see, there's probably, how many guys? We're probably like right in the middle of the pack at that point, right? Like there was some guys in front of us, some guys had already left, some guys they were at Phantom going to the bathroom. We passed them to the water source, and then we knew there was some guys behind us. But yeah, I just started climbing up and knew it was, I want to say it was like 6 o'clock, 5:45, 6 when we left there, and going, okay, it's going to take us kind of right on that schedule. It's going to take us 3 hours to get out of here and back to camp. And great. And we start climbing up, and the certainly just the day of the entirety of all the miles, we're pushing low 40s as we're climbing up that thing. And it gets dark and I just kind of get in a zone and I'm plugging along, and then like, all right, yeah, cruising. I'm probably 2/3 of the way up, and then I realize that there's a halfway down that trail, there's a sign that basically, I think it says 3 point to yeah, three, it's either 3.5 to Phantom Ranch and 3.8 to the top, or vice versa. Either way,
Yeah,
it's
it's
dang near
roughly half.
halfway, and I realize like I haven't seen that sign because it was just a blip in my mind of that morning going down, how excited we were just bebopping along. And it's like, holy crap. And I just start hiking and hiking and hiking. And like, I feel like 20 minutes went by before I finally got to that sign. It's like, ooh, okay. I need to back off the pace just a touch. This is pull out of here is, it's pretty substantial. It was significantly harder for me climbing the South Trail as it was going up to the North Rim. Obviously more miles on the body at that point, but it's a steeper grade. You do more elevation in a shorter distance compared to the other one. But and then about, yeah, it gets dark, and then the winds were blowing, but they weren't terrible, and they just came out of nowhere to where it was, they were supposed to, and the forecast had called for, one like a 30% chance of 1 inch of snow that night, and it wasn't even on my radar to, like, when you get a forecast like that, it's like, yeah, whatever, like that means it's just a little, like a couple snowflakes that fall and not a big deal at all. And it starts snowing pretty hard. It's dark. My dumbass, I tried a new headlamp that the battery completely died that morning, and I don't know what happened to it. But as a side note, like I was running my Garmin watch, and it's got that built-in little torch light. That thing, I mean, I hiked the
So
entire way
cool.
back with my freaking Garmin watch as my headlamp all the way back to camp. And it worked fantastic, actually, for just seeing the trail, the 2 steps in front of you. But it was a little inconvenient because I'm like trying to hold my trekking pole, and I put my watch like in my hand and was trying to hold it so the light would shine on the ground. But the it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, man. The wind's blowing. There's this little section that's kind of the rocks, the trail up rocks open up, and the trail passes through it, and it's kind of cliffy on both sides. And the gust that was like funneling through that was very legit. Like that probably like sparked a little bit of like, this is kind of dangerous, in my mind. And I don't ever worry about myself, but I coordinate this entire event. I worry about every single person out on that trail. Obviously, we all knowingly take the risk and do these hikes, but still, like I feel responsible for every single person, right? I want to make sure they're all safe and get home to their families. So that was probably the first moment, 'cause it like I was I the wind was blowing, and I started walking across that, and it was almost like a bridge in the sense of just really exposed. And I had to like lean really hard not to get blown off the cliff to the left side, and like leaning into the cliff on the right side. And like, geez, this is, if you're not in a good mental state, or you're really physically exhausted, and this kind of surprised you, it could not be pretty. But yeah, wind keeps just getting harder, starts snowing more and more, get I end up catching up to some other guys, end up hiking with Brian Chapman to the all the way to the top. And that definitely, like, in the dark, that just kept dragging on and on and on. Like, you're like, okay, you got to be getting close, and then you look up and you see a headlamp way the hell up above you. I'm like, holy crap. But eventually get to the top, and I was again the only person that I guess I'm worried about everybody else's safety. I did not pack a jacket or anything. I had a super thin sun hoodie and shorts on, and it's snowing pretty good, and it's probably 20 degrees, and really strong. I'd say steady 20 to 30 mile an hour wind, and basically walked back to camp. And by the time I got back to camp, was significantly cold. I'll say that. Like, I got just everything I could do to get into the van, turn the heater on, got on all my insulation layers, and just proceeded to jackhammer shiver so hard, right, that it took about 30 minutes to warm up. But once I did, I started making a meal, and then immediately, like, stopped being selfish. I'm like, oh crap, like, if I'm this cold and other guys don't have layers, I wonder how everybody else is doing. So then I sent out a text message to everybody who I knew who was still potentially out there on the trail, and said, hey, if you need picked up at the North Rim, let me know. We'll drive the van over, come get you. And immediately, at this point, you had just gotten back to camp as well. And immediately I got a text message from Justin Clement. Actually, he called me. He had just gotten to the North Rim, and he sounded like death. He's like, I need picked up. The wind's whipping. It's like, okay. So we you, me, and my brother-in-law Jory, we all jump in the van, drive over there, get Justin. He gets in the van with us. Got the heater cranking, getting him warmed up. And again, it's just proceeding to, like, really snow heavily at this point, very high winds, very low visibility. And I'm just worried about the rest of the guys getting out safe. So it becomes, my mind went 180 degrees from I just want to get to bed and do the next day, which like right before getting to the top of the rim was that was my game plan, to all I care about right now is just making sure everybody gets out of here safe.
Yeah, Jory and I started the climb with you out, and then I don't know what point, but at some point you pulled away, and then Jory and I hung together and finished together. But yeah, just to echo, I mean, it got really windy, really cold, and way more snow than I expected. And you and I hadn't talked, right? Because you had pulled away. But as we were finishing the climb out of there, I had some of the same thoughts of, if everyone was. And if everyone's fresh mentally and physically, like, whatever it is, what it is, but knowing that guys were, 45 miles in, a long day, only getting longer for the people behind us. And then I also know what it's like to be in that mental state where you really honestly kind of don't realize some of your decision making, and you get to the point where, like, even physically, like, you're not as coordinated, not as agile. It's like I was starting to be like, you're on these exposed spots, super windy, enough so that it's kind of blowing you a little bit. And then if guys are like loopy, trippy, uncoordinated, I was like, man, this sucks, right? And as more snow fell, it was covering the trail, it was getting slick. And then, yeah, man, like, once we crested out of the North Rim and had that, 2.5 to 3 mile hike back to camp, and you're not pushing as hard, you're not as climbing. Like, that last, I mean, it took us probably an hour, was brutally cold. Like, I was completely tensed up, and yeah, it was brutally cold. And so when we got back and you were like, hey, let's hop in the van, let's go pick guys up, in my head immediately, I was like, that's a good call, right? Because even quote unquote cutting the hike a little shorter to pick people up and save them a few miles, like, that's not something we would normally ever do on a death hike. It's like, yeah, finish your few miles, we're like, we're not picking you up. But the conditions were a little bit worrisome, especially for the guys who were like, we don't know how far back they are at that point, right? Like, and we don't know what state they're in. There's just a lot of unknown there.
I mean, it 100% to me went to safety, like 100%. Like I said, 180 degree flip from get there, get to bed, wake up, do this again to, okay, priority number one, everyone's out, and this is actually legit. my wife was joking. She's like, if you're telling me it's you were worried about safety, it must be pretty bad. Because normally I'm pretty like, it's fine. Like, whatever. Yeah. We weren't actually going to die. It was just, you thought you were, but the risk was like, 0.001. So we pick up Justin and kind of asking like, okay, one, we're trying to figure out who's still out there. Cause we don't exactly know, right? Like some guys are back at camp. The front group, the guys that got out in front of us, they're eating pizza at the restaurant and over in the Grand Canyon Village. And we're over here at the trailhead, just like trying to figure out what's going on. And, we kind of get a pretty good list of like who's out there. So Clement comes out, and then I think as we were somewhere along the line, some guys snuck by us. No, that was in between going back to get Clement. So we knew there was,
as we were driving, some guys had exited and were between camp
walking
and trailhead. Yeah.
So once Clement was out, we knew for sure there was five guys still out there. You got Kyle, Miles, Justin, Christian, and Gabriel. And quite a while goes by. Boshma and Scott came by. They took Clement back in a van they had rented so he could go back, get to bed, whatever, eat some food. And then you and I stayed there. I don't want to say exact times are getting fuzzy now, but about 12:30.
Yeah, I think it was 12:30.
Did Kyle come out? So Kyle and Miles came out, and they were doing fine. They were, taking their time, but they were that was actually hilarious.
It was hilarious.
Remember,
yeah.
They were we're parked in the parking lot. It's whiteout conditions. The wind's howling. We see them pop out, and you open up the door and, "Hey guys, you want to ride?" And they looked at you like you were some child molester freaking about ready to abduct them. Like,
they don't know it's me
this guy
sticking out of the van. So I'm like, "Hey guys, want to ride?" And they look at me and look at each other and don't say a word. And there's just like this awkward pause. And I was like, "It's like, do you want to ride? Like, if you want to finish, finish. But if you want to get in the van, get in the van." And then finally Kyle was like, "Is that Mark?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's me. Do you guys want to ride?" But still, they just looked at each other and didn't say a word. And I think they thought it was like some sort of like death hike setup. Like, if you say yes and come towards this van, we are going to destroy you. And so finally I was like, "It's not a trick. It's not a joke. If you want to ride, come to the van,"
That was so funny. But that's when, so then obviously I'm worrying to get out guys, make sure they all get out safe, but we're just hoping, all right, the other three guys, these guys are out, the other three are right behind them. We talked with Kyle and Miles, they jump in the van obviously with us, and they like, "Well, when's the last time you saw the other three guys?" I'm like, "Well, we haven't seen them since before the North Rim." And I was like, "What? Like, you haven't seen them since before the North Rim?" Like, there was, I expected like, "Oh yeah, they were right at Phantom Ranch getting water right when we left. They should be right behind us, But no, like they hadn't seen them for, at this point,
20 miles,
12 hours ago, right? 11, 12 hours that go by and no one's seen them. Which, it's like, not, if they were just moving slower, is not inconsistent with what would be reality. Just still is a little concerning. And then they said, there's two guys below us, but they're not a part of our group. They had passed them at the bottom or something like that. And what I think at that point, you had a bunch of insulation layers on. I was like, "Hey, let me take these guys back." You jumped out, in these freaking pretty miserable conditions. You walk over to the rim, and I'm going to go drop those other guys back, come back. And I'm like, "Okay, those guys they're right behind them. They can't be that far behind. By the time I drop these guys off, get back," because it was like a 20-minute little round trip, like, "the other guys will be out." And during that time, the two guys that were down below pop out, because there's another guy waiting in a Toyota 4Runner in the parking lot waiting for these two guys to come out. And you talk to them, and what they're like, basically told you they haven't seen anybody. There's no headlamps below them.
Yeah, these two guys, totally separate group and all that. But I can see their headlamps switch backing up the canyon as, you're driving those guys back to camp and whatnot. And I'm waiting, and it's legit white out, and the snow's building like on the trail. And these guys finally make it out, and they came out, you know, a little bit within a minute of each other, but a little bit separately. And so I talked to each of them individually, and I was like, "Hey, you know, I'm waiting on three guys. Are they behind you?" And they just looked at me like I was insane. Like, "No, we haven't seen anybody." And I was like, "You mean recently? Like, you haven't seen somebody behind you?" Or, and they're like, "No, the whole climb. Like, we haven't seen anybody in hours." And I was just like, "What?" And it's, you know, as you're, they probably, these two guys probably climbed the whole climb in the dark. And as you're going up the canyon and switchbacking in the dark, I mean, it's pitch black dark. So any light, any little headlamp, with especially with all the switchbacks and the way the canyon turns, like you would 100%.
Yeah. Someone's behind you.
98%.
Within an hour, you're going to see.
Yeah. Like you would be seeing someone, especially at night with a headlamp.
Yeah.
And but, so at that point, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing we had like a little bit of hope was you're like, the guys are pretty out of it. So it was a good chance in those conditions. They just weren't looking behind them. They're back there. And, so that's probably 1 o'clock close to.
Yeah. It was one
right there.
A little after.
Yeah. And, you know, this obviously, you and I are pushing up, being up for 24 hours. We just hiked 50 something miles and getting pretty damn tired, you know, like, and, you know, I know Christian, I know Justin have in reaches. And so I'm just like, we're messaging them, not getting responses back. And, you know, as for me being the group leader, I just immediately like, I'm responsible for everybody. What can I do here to make sure these guys are safe? You know, and you just pretty basically felt very helpless. Like it's legit dangerous conditions out there. And if somebody's in a bad spot, you know, that the trail shockingly had, you know, at some point in time, they, you know, put a bunch of wood across the trail to help build the steps and erosion and whatnot, and they'd hammer kind of secured those with rebar, and there's little 3-inch pieces of rebar sticking out all over that trail, which blew me away for like a national park, the amount of people that hike that. I mean, it's legit dangerous to run that in the dark with a headlamp. Like it's you know, there is actual legit, you know, you got a 5-foot wide trail, but if you clip one of those with your toe and you're tired, and all of a sudden, you know, you got a 50-foot cliff to 500-foot cliff to your 3 feet to your right, you know, so my mind is worried about these guys and just not hearing from them. But eventually we're like, I think we stayed there till like 1:40, 1:45.
Yeah, it was
and
till two.
I was
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, we've done everything we can do. You had walked over one last time to the kind of the edge of the rim, looked down. I don't see any headlights. I think that was the effort. Now that I'm replaying this, like, I don't see any headlights. And if they were, I would see them an hour before they got to the top, you know, the way you could see headlights all the way down there. And like, well, all right, let's just, they're, you know, they're just taking their time. One of the guys has probably got a real bum knee. They're just going super slow. Let's go back. Let's get a little bit of sleep. And I'm just kind of convinced myself, like, they're fine. As soon as I get back to camp, it's going to be like, it's going to piss me off. I'm going to lay my head down and they're going to call me. I have to get back out of my sleep bag, come pick them up. But great. Like, they'll be more than happy to do that. So go back to camp, crawl in the sleeping bag, and said, I'm just convinced that's going to happen. And I fall asleep. And I think I wake up 15 minutes later and just kind of like, they hadn't called. I had nothing. And this is like 2:20, 2:30 in the morning. I lay there. I'm like pulling up, like, is there any incident reportings on the Grand Canyon Facebook page? You know, something I can just find, something. Like I was, you know, just nothing made sense to me at this point. Cause I was trying to run through all the different scenarios. And anywho, I lay there for 30 minutes. Finally, Anthony Oberti, he's good buddies with Christian. I was like, well, maybe Christian messaged him at some point during the day on the inReach to check in, and at least gives me like they were at Phantom Ranch at this time, right? So I could like put things in perspective and try to place where they could be on the hike. So it's like 3:05 in the morning. I walk over to Anthony's tent. I mean, he's just passed out, you know, I'm sure, just sleeping hard. Hey, Anthony, you awake, man? I need like any word from Christian. And he was just like, oh, fuck. You know, like, those guys still aren't out yet, you know, and then the wind's just ripping. It's cold. And, And then Dan Solzman's sleeping in a tent next to him. And we kind of, you know, I'm out there chatting and we're just kind of all talking for 10 minutes about like, what should we do? What shouldn't we do? You know, it's like, there's not much we can do. Anthony's like, I could text his wife and see if he's checked in with her. He's like, she's going to freak out. And you're just kind of like, ah, I don't, you know, like, how do you really want to pull that switch, you know? And, then eventually Dan threw it out. He's like, hey, Steve, you've been out for 24 hours, man. Like, go lay down in the tent. Anthony and I will jump in the van. We'll go over, check, and report back to you. So they're going to drive over to the trailhead. And literally about the time they go get in the van, Christian calls and said, hey, we're out. And Dan, I'm like laying on my head on my pillow, and Dan's like, oh, they're just got a call, they're out. And like I mean, the sense of relief that came over me was significant, man. 'Cause I said, at this point, you know, it's 3 in the morning, the temperature, it's absolutely god awful outside. And there were, you know, 3 hours, close to 3 hours behind the other slowest group. You know, it was definitely concerning. So to have that, like, oh, thank God everybody's out. And I proceeded to fall asleep within like 42 seconds, and was out until Tyler Boshma, when he, because he took Kyle, or who, I can't remember who, it's all mixed together. But at some point, we were in the van waiting to pick up guys. It was after midnight, and I told Tyler, like, I'm going tomorrow. Like, I'm going to hike. I'm just like, I'll just, the plan was like, you know, what I mentioned earlier about making things digestible. Like, let me just go hike to Phantom, see how I feel. If I feel terrible, I'll turn around, hike back out, knowing that very likely I'd get down there and be like, oh, I made it this far, I'm gonna finish the whole thing. But yeah, Tyler called me at, you know, 6:30 in the morning, because that's when I said, just check in with me. And I woke up, and then the snow was like blowing underneath my tent vestibule and still snowing, and I was just like, fudge, I guess we're not going today, you know. And I just, I am currently going through different levels of pissed offness, that I didn't just man up and go back after it that next day, because I certainly was physically capable. But just, you know, I mean, it's a legit excuse, but it's still an excuse. Like, I set a goal and I didn't achieve it. And I guess that's certainly like got a fire lit under me to push harder, do more, train better. You know, yeah, certainly, like, instead of being a bit like, there's an angry aspect, but it's also like immediately pivoting to how can I learn from this, and how can I not let this happen the next time?
Yeah, for context, it's what is today? Today's Thursday. So this was all last weekend and earlier in the week. Like, as this week has gone on, we've been recording the segments with different participants, which you'll hear on this podcast in a minute. But we just recorded one with Jack Lander just this morning, just before we're having this conversation. And we were talking about, you know, the quote-unquote failure aspect of it. And he mentioned something like there's some beauty in failure, like from lessons learned, but also some of the positives that came out of, because we didn't do day two, like more people got to spend time together, et cetera, which, like, no part of me really let myself mentally go there until he said that, because it's been nothing but bitter. Like, you and I, Steve, like, we flew home Sunday night, obviously separately, and you called me Monday morning and you were flat out. I told Jake, I was like, just so you know, Steve's really crabby today. Like, you were ticked Monday morning.
Well, just 'cause, and I knew, like, I was physically, like, my left knee's achy and bothering me a little bit, but I, you know, there was 4 months, three, I guess, really, I mean, just January, February, March, so 3 months of very, I mean, there are a lot of trail time and miles and sacrifice, and you set this goal and you don't achieve it. It's just, there's a lot of disappointment there. A lot of sacrifice not to get that, you know. Ultimately, you want a proper death hike, right? You want to really suffer, and I never once was even remotely close to that in that first part of the hike. you want to learn and grow from it. And I do think there, I mean, obviously there's some, a lot of the learning and growth comes throughout the process, right? It's not just the event. It's the entire, all the training, all the effort that went into and the planning and everything that went into leading up to the hike. You know, you could certainly say that that was the death hike. It was just spread out over 3 months of, you know, obviously for you, very early mornings on Saturday and trying to maximize being a husband and father to your kids and still find time to train and get after it. And all that, you know, comes with a lot of sacrifice. And I guess through that, there's growth, right? Through that, there's lots of growth. But the actual pinnacle of the thing to come back as a failure stings.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's hard. It's a, there's a lot of bittersweet. I mean, on the positives, I think it's a, it is amazing how efficient we were able to tackle day one. And not personally, yes, like I felt like my training was, again, for the time constraints I had, for some of the decisions I've made, for some of the different ways I trained this year, which we can talk more about later. But like, I feel like I crushed the training. I feel like I crushed the day. A rim to rim to rims, not nothing. 50 miles in a day is not nothing. Doing it with as little rest as we did is not nothing. I mean, definitely felt more dialed on nutrition and hydration than I ever have. So I'm trying to focus on a lot of the good takeaways, because at the end of the day, it's really just easy to look back and go, well, that sucked, right? But at the end of the day, I have to like balance that with, I just hiked a rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon, a phenomenal place, got to do it with amazing dudes, got to spend time like with Jory, who I hadn't met before, didn't know, and just really enjoyed and learned a lot. As you said, the training was valuable, it was executed well. So it's, I think it just highlights the human nature that we all have to focus on what we don't have at the expense of not being as grateful for what we do have, right? And it's easy to think about that like in terms of possessions or whatever, but I'm even trying to think about that with this hike, of like trying to appreciate all of the things that went well and the opportunity had, and not just, you know, be bitter and angry and crabby, because that's what I want to be. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a like a kind of a roller coaster of processing since then.
Yeah. I'm figuring out either like I'm going back to the Grand Canyon this year and going to reattempt that, or I'll do something else, like go find, you know, go try to replicate last year's hike that we did on Mount Bora in Idaho, and end up, you know, I want to do something. I gotta keep pushing. But to Jack's point, like we did pivot very well. It's like, okay, we got a full day here before everybody flies home. We're driving back to Vegas. So I immediately jump on Airbnb and find this really badass, like a penthouse kind of condo on Airbnb that we rented, and had a hot tub and a pool table. And we watched the one of the Final Four games. And we pivoted and made a lot of fun of it. Like we were like, hey, we're here, we might as well maximize what we got. And at one point I said, like, this is not exactly like at that current point, you know, it was like Saturday night at 10 o'clock sipping on a whiskey, sitting in a hot tub, like, this is not where I'm supposed to be right now, but we're making the most of it. It was, you know, I guess that's lessons learned from, you know, past experiences, right? Of take what you got, make the most of it. And I'm going to feed right into the experience project that we're working on, which is step back and enjoy the process, enjoy where you're at that moment, and really just soak in the experience in its entirety.
Well, before we wrap up this podcast, again, there's a lot more to come with like the segments, four different guys, four different experiences, just hear more about their perspective, what they learned, what they did and didn't do well, etc. And there's so much good in those segments to come. But for you and I, Steve, in terms of wrapping up our portion of the conversation, any of the practical, nitty gritty, you know, takeaway type things that you wanna talk about?
No, I don't think nothing comes to mind, man. To me, this was, you've got those the practical things, but at the end of the day, what these always are is comes down to between your ears, and yeah, and that's where I failed.
To go with this, I'll leave a link in the show description. Some of my takeaways, which I don't mind mentioning here, but people always want like links and stuff. So there'll be a link with some of the things, like my food list, some of the gear stuff, which was minimal but worked well. So some of my just kind of takeaways and all that, we'll have a link to that. You guys can go read about and see, and also at that page, they'll just be all the links to the previous Death Hike content. So if you're hearing this somehow and aren't familiar with previous Death Hikes, what we have done, what the backstory is, that link will just be a good central spot because we essentially have a some sort of Death Hike recap for every year except for 2020, the COVID year.
I will say this year along those lines, if we had done this hike back in 2015, 16, it'd be remembered as incredibly hard. Like, wouldn't even have attempted to, wouldn't even been on our radar. The things we have learned and how to train for these, how to take care of your body, how to fuel up, take care of your feet. They continue to make them easier and easier. I think it's some Was it last year or the year prior I made the comment? Like, I don't know how we're gonna have a
Yeah, it was
true
this
death
year.
hike. Again, because we've getting more efficient. It's got to get to the point where you're doing something incredibly difficult. You know what I mean? Like a whole nother level. But this year would have. I mean, I do think if we could, with the opportunity was there for it to be a good one.
Agreed.
If we had done day two, because it would have been some dark moments during that day that you would have had to have overcome.
I mean, it was partially, obviously the weather was a factor, but time was a huge factor because I do think, we couldn't like catch a little bit of rest and then start later on Saturday because we all had to leave for sure on Sunday to drive back to Vegas and to catch flights. And I mean, I think that the second go round, I mean, wouldn't have just been slightly slower, meaning like an hour. I think it would have been multiple hours. And so I think pretty much everybody finished between 16 and what ended up being almost 24 hours on round one. And I think for anybody who would have taken whatever their time was on that first go, it would have been multiple hours, I think, of time added to that. But that alone, like even that fact alone, bugs the crap out of me because I want to know how closely could I have matched my day one time. So I'm sorry, I'm back to being better. Well, that's a wrap, guys. Don't forget, this is just part one of the two-part episodes. Go check out episode number 458, where you will hear from four participants of the Death Hike, their experiences, lessons learned, and more. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, you can contact us directly via email by sending a message to podcast@exomountgear.com. And if you haven't yet, be sure to hit subscribe or follow in your podcast app so that you receive future episodes automatically. And we'll talk to you soon.